When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. My name is Lucas Vlahos. I'm joined by Thomas Henderson and Ken Lavin this week. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing good.
Nice. It is a miserable 40-degree and misty day, and it sucks, and I hate it.
Yeah. Rough weather.
No, it's needs to be 10 degrees colder and snowing, or don't bother with this bullshit. It's very obnoxious.
Yeah, the rain sucks.
it's bad. So we are in a bit of a rush for those of us who care about football today. Got to go watch the Taylor Swifts against the Baltimore. Like, Ray Lewis isn't on the team anymore, so I can't make a criminals joke,
no.
But you know, fuck the Ravens anyway. So we'll try to zip through things a little bit. Really brief promote extend trade today. I wanted to do something about space exploration because yesterday is the anniversary of the Apollo 1 fire. 50-year anniversary, I believe. But I didn't have the time or mental bandwidth to really come up with something. Instead, we'll talk about some shitty relievers the Mets have signed over the years since the Mets just brought back Adam Ottavino for some reason. So go pick out of these three relievers, promote, extend, trade them. Anthony Swarzak, Frank Francisco, and Adam 2024 Adam Ottavino. Make your best predictions about what he does.
Oh, God. Anthony Swarzak was a special breed.
Oh, yeah. That was an interesting one.
That one sucked.
Anthony Swarzak in 2018, he threw 26 innings, had an ERA of 6.15, and a FIP of 5.5. He gave up 2 homers per 9.
I think it kind of depends on, like, because he was pretty inexpensive, if I remember correctly.
Let's see. I want to say like 2-12.
Yeah, like Frank Francisco got actual money to be terrible.
Anthony Swarzak. 2-14 for Swarzak. Frank Francisco, Spotrac. If I was a good host, I would have looked this stuff up before. Okay, Frank Francisco got 2-12. Anthony Swarzak got 2-14.
So my brain has Frank Francisco making like $40 million because it was so long ago.
This was like, back in 2012. Like so 2-12
like
was bigger.
Like the Familia money.
Yeah.
Like for some reason I always combined him with the Familia contract, so that's good to know. But I don't know. Ottavino's probably better than both of them, even if he's probably also a little washed.
I sure hope he's better than Anthony Swarzak. My only memory of Frank Francisco is that one time he hit someone on the Phillies, and Ron was just so absolutely disgusted with it, disgusted. With it in the booth. Like if Keith had been that disgusted with anything, there would have been some sounds, but it was just like disapproval from Ron afterwards.
That's like really
cold
funny.
Fury from the booth. Oh God. Frank Francisco was go ahead.
He wasn't awful, right? It was just kind of like whatever.
He had a 5.5 ERA, but there seems to be a lot of bad luck in that. Like his BABIP was 340, his left on base was 67. Like he walked too many dudes, but he struck out a good number. And the Mets just never had any success with relievers, frankly.
We are justice for Frank Francisco posting on the podcast.
Yeah. I think I'd go Ottavino, Swarzak, Francisco, just because, you know, you disappoint Ron Darling, and I'm going to be disappointed in you too.
I agree with that.
Okay, so this week we are unsurprisingly continuing our march through the top 25, and we have numbers 7 or 11 through 7 this week. Number 11 is right-hand pitcher Blade Tidwell. That's not the post I wanted. Number 10 is Dominic Hamill. Number 9 is third baseman Jacob Reimer. Number 8 is right-hand pitcher Mike Vassell. And number 7 is infielder Marco Vargas. I don't know whether to call him a second baseman or a shortstop. We'll talk about that when we get there. So we got 3 college righties and 2 prep slash IFA infielders, both of whom I think are on the upswing. So another good group here. Again, not as spicy as the one we talked about 2 weeks ago still. No. I think that's going to remain the spiciest group just because it was so contentious, especially among the commentariat. So, but this is an interesting group of guys, and I think is indicative of some of the improved Mets processes, which is also good to talk about. So let's start with right-hand pitcher Blade Tidwell. He was the Mets' second-round pick in 2022 out of the University of Tennessee. He split the year between high A and double A this year. In high A, he had a 3.09 ERA over 81.2 innings pitched. Struck out 112, walked 46, which is more than you want. Went to double A. This is only over 8 games and 34 innings. He had a 4.72 ERA, 41 strikeouts, and again, 17 walks, which is more than you want. Tidwell was a big college arm back when he was drafted. The Mets got him maybe a little bit later than might have been expected because of his shoulder issues at the time. I think I got him towards the top of the second round this year.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I can't recall. Tidwell's got it all looks right? Like if we were talking 10, 15 years ago, I think Blade Tidwell would probably be a top 100 pitching prospect in baseball. We'd be a lot more excited because he's a big, strong kid who throws, can touch triple digits while starting. And that was, all it took. Now we know a bit more, of course, even though he doesn't really touch triple digits. It tops out around 98. It's not the best pitch. He gets hammered on contact. He doesn't have the best control. The slider is probably the best secondary, and it works reasonably well. But again, not really a standout pitch in terms of whiff rate, and the control issues are really holding him back there. There's a curveball and a change. I don't know that either of them are viable at the moment. And that's honestly a tertiary concern relative to other things. I think this ranking might also wind up being a little contentious because people are going to see the big strikeout numbers and recognize the name brand value here and be like, wow, that's a good prospect. And in reality, I think you look under the hood and do some visual scouting, it's less appealing. So what do you guys think about Blade Tidwell? Do we have him in the right spot here? Where are we going with Tidwell in the next year?
I think we have him in the right spot because I think he's kind of in the middle of the Mets pitching prospect pack at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Christian Scott soon and he's better. I don't think he's as bad or as low ceiling as a Tyler Stewart. So I think right around here is fine just because I think it's kind of middle of where the Mets pitching prospects are right now, which is a good thing or a better thing than we're used to, I would say.
I mean, I think unlike Stewart, Tidwell has a much more, standard arsenal that plays up in the bullpen. Yeah. Right? It's much clearer that this shit should work if he's airing it out for a couple innings.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily, I think he'll be a major leaguer more. I'm way more confident in that than I am in Stewart, even though I think Stewart probably gets up there. I think Tidwell could be up for a bit, even if he's quote unquote just a reliever.
When do you think we've had this discussion with numerous guys over the years, and it's always interesting. When do you move him to the bullpen? Should it have already happened? Is it going to happen at the start of next year? When are we making that move? Go ahead, Ken. What do you think on that front? I'm curious.
I don't know. I think it's results driven. He pitched in Double A this year.
Was not great.
Yeah, I mean, if he continues to, if the results continue to not be great this year, I think you'd probably want to, you know, push him to the pen, given everything we've mentioned, that the profile fits better there, the stuff fits better there. Yeah, I'd probably do it this year if the results aren't good.
Yep.
Out of the rotation.
But I think you give him a chance to start as a starter this year.
Mm. I'm trying because to...
I would just rather have the starting depth.
That's fair. I'm trying to remember. I mean, the Brewers have obviously had a lot of success making pitchers better. Have they really excelled with a stuff over command guy and improved his command? I'm not. Was Corbin Burnes that guy? I don't remember Corbin Burnes as a prospect, honestly.
I don't remember him much, to be honest, as a prospect either.
Let's see. Corbin Burnes, minor leagues. Not what I wanted. No, again, simplistic analysis to just assume that, you know, whatever the Brewers can do, Stearns will do here. Nope. Burnes had good control throughout the minors, basically. He took a jump from 2016 to 2017, but the 2016 sample's nothing. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they have Jacob Mizurowski right now, and they really haven't tamed that yet. And Tidwell's stuff is nowhere near as good as Mizurowski's, but the command problems are maybe a little bit similar. Yeah. I mean, look, Jacob Mizurowski's like a top 50 prospect in baseball. I'd be jumping around the room if Blake Tidwell was anywhere close to that, and he isn't. Are you more concerned about the command or the fastball shape? And those, it's not totally fair to separate those, of course. Like, shape is somewhat tied to command and where you put it. But which of those strikes you as the bigger concern long term here?
I think it's fastball shape. Like, I think you could survive on with command issues if you have good enough stuff where people will swing at it anyway and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is like modern baseball, people swing at more things anyway, I feel. But if your fastball is getting lit up like that, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem wherever you are, bullpen, starting pitching, whatever.
Yeah.
He's got to figure that one out. I think that's more important to, I think, his overall long-term future. Because there's plenty of relievers who can't find the strike zone, quote-unquote, or have bad command, whatever, and they're still viable players. Like, because they still get outs or swings and misses anyway.
I mean, Adam Ottavino has been that guy on and off for years.
And he's like 40, and he made millions and millions of dollars and was like a good reliever for a really long time. And he never had great command. So, I mean, Edwin Diaz doesn't have great command.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Tidwell doesn't have Edwin Diaz level stuff, but.
I mean, when Diaz is on, it's probably like, what, 8-8, 8-7 on the two? It's probably 8-8 fastball slider for Diaz.
Yeah, probably 8-8. I would say 8-8.
But
like, the command's never great. It just doesn't matter for him. And of course, that's a different story. The command is going to matter a little more for Tidwell because the stuff's not that good. But if the fastball shape was better, then the command would. So it's kind of both, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can get to a 6 on the slider sweeper. Like, I think that's a good pitch when he commands it. But I agree with your opinion that the fastball shape is concerning. It's going to be. It's almost like I'm trying to think of a good corollary of it's going to be a fastball that you're always watching it. Like, wow, that looks great out of the hand. It's got good velo. This should be doing better. And it's landing in the seats way too often.
Yeah. I mean, that's what even happens sometimes when I'd watch him in. He was a weird watch, though. Whenever I saw him in Brooklyn, like,
how do you mean?
There were times where he would just like. The only pitch that could do anything around the zone ever was the slider sweeper. Like, the fastball would just be not even in the area code, and it would just, when it was in the zone, get hit. But his slider was just, like, nasty. Mm-hmm. In the same outing. It was bizarre. It's so weird. It's, like, the opposite of how you think a pitcher should be with something that just goes straight. He has nowhere idea where it's going, and something that's moving like crazy, he kind of does. Maybe Ottavino's the comp. Like, if the sweeper gets a little better. And he's just left-handed Adam Ottavino.
Yeah, I mean, Ottavino's in his best years, his sweeper has been like as good as any version of it in baseball.
Sure. But if he's that as a lefty, that's like a very fine reliever.
Is Tidwell a lefty? Am I crazy?
I think he is, isn't he? No, he's not. He's right-handed. He's right-handed. You're right. So then.
Thomas gaslighting the whole pod.
Gaslighting myself too. But.
I wonder if, given that comp, if he'd be better off throwing a sinker than a four seamer then, because
maybe.
And I will admit this has been one of my off-season projects which I have not followed through on, because I'll blame work mostly. But understanding why we were seeing a lot more sinkers in the last 12 to 18 months, I feel teams are starting to realize how to have good ones, and guys who had shitty four seam shapes are suddenly throwing good sinkers. I think this is something that might happen with Paul Skeens, for instance, whose fastball shape is horrible outside of the velocity aspect. So I do wonder if there's something there to having Tidwell throw a different fastball, and maybe that solves a lot of these issues.
Or at least it makes it a little, you could play off things a little bit more with that. Mm-hmm. And then sinker slider is like, if you can pull that off reliably, you're chilling.
Then you literally are Adam Ottavino.
Yeah.
I personally think we're a touch high in our net rating for Tidwell here, but I don't think it's egregiously so. And I personally, I'm willing to just shove him in the bullpen immediately and see what happens, but we'll see. We'll see if anything new happens here with Stearns coming in. So that's Tidwell, which is he's the last non-top 10 prospect. We're now moving into the real juice of the system. And that's another right-hand pitcher from the college ranks in Dominic Hamill. Dominic Hamill was a third-round pick out of Dallas Baptist University in 2021. In 2023, he spent the year at AA Binghamton. 25 games started. I think he had one extra outing out of the bullpen. Yes, one extra outing out of the bullpen. 124 innings pitched. 3.85 ERA. 160 strikeouts and 50 walks with a 317 BABIP. Hamill, I think, has long been someone I've been a fan of and yelled about it repeatedly on the pod. Decent fastball, high spin curveball. That's always been the selling point here. Had some health issues, but mostly stayed on the field this year better than he has in the past. It's really just, it feels the same as it always has, and I'm surprised he didn't get to AAA this year, given how good he was in AA for the whole season. That felt a little odd to me. But he now is in line to be in the rotation mix for the upcoming year. So where are you guys at on Hamill? I think I've been the high guy on him in the past. Do you think we're a little too high on him now, or did we get this right as well?
He's a weird player. I don't know. I feel like I was on his recap cycle. So I kept seeing his starts, and they were like, he went four innings and gave up one run and struck out like seven, but he walked like four or five every it felt like it was like that for every outing early in the year. And then he started to, somewhere around midseason, it started to get a lot better for him. This is all anecdotal, like from what I'm remembering. But I remember he started to go a little longer because he started to walk less people and everything like that. And I'm curious to see how that plays going forward. I'm curious to see if that was like an actual thing that he was able to figure out how to change. I'm curious to see if it was just baseball and that's what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how he takes those changes and kind of goes to the next level, because I do think there's something there if he can find the zone more. It's just been such a problem for him.
And his walks this year were not as bad. I think he
probably because the second half of the year like started to have him come down.
Mm-hmm.
But he felt rough in the beginning.
He kept them under four for the first time in his career, 3.56, and he still struck out almost 12 per nine. But I agree, like the command and control is not fine. That said, the issues we were just talking about with Tidwell very much aren't here, right? Like while Tidwell has the visually impressive fastball and the velocity, but it gets hammered, Hamill does not have the velocity and dudes can't hit it. And I think that makes a huge difference in my willingness to project him as like a plus pitcher somewhere down the line, as opposed to
Tidwell. And I think that's why he's 10 and Tidwell 11, or right? 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing. Yep. Exactly. So, like, I think we have them in the right order, because I think that is true.
Maybe there's an argument that there's more runway for Tidwell still. They're both 24 at this point. I think Tidwell's almost 24 and Hamill is 24. In my mind, Hamill has a plus fastball, one plus breaker, and another average breaker, and maybe slightly below average command, but not disastrous to the extent of Tidwell, and all of that together just seems like a much better prospect in my eyes.
Okay, so I have his monthly splits, and
okay,
BREF only does it by like total walks, so we'll have to like kind of use it that way, but sure. You can kind of see the vision anyway. In 15 innings in April, he walked 13 batters. 23 innings in May, he only walked 2, which is impressive.
Huh.
In June, he walked 9 in 22, then he walked 10 in 21 in July, 10 in 27 in August, and 5 in 14 in September. So it was a little more over all around than I remember.
That first month was horrific, and then it's like pretty consistent.
And then it kind of came down, yeah. And the strikeouts stayed the same. Like, that's the big positive here, is that he kept striking people out regardless. So, logically, if you think about it, if he keeps the walks in that area, it's not the worst thing in the world, you know? So there's more to dream on. There's some to dream on here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if the walks get down to 3 as opposed to close to 4, and he's still striking out 10 per 9, I'm trying to find a major league comp who did something similar to that this year. Nope. Wow, Pablo Lopez struck out that many batters? That's insane. All right, so caveating this up front, I'm not saying that Dominic Hamill is Dylan Cease. Please do not interpret it that way. fuck Dylan Cease. Let's go with Kodai Senga. 10.9 strikeouts per 9, 4.1 walks per 9.
That's perfectly fine.
You can be really good doing that. Now, I don't think he's Kodai Senga or Dylan Cease. I don't think he's going to be that level, but there's no reason you can't be a high strikeout back-end guy or a multi-inning reliever with this arsenal, with this level of control, and maybe it still gets a little bit better. Who knows? So... yeah, I'm a big Dominic Hamill fan. I'm still a big fan. I'm still a fan. Where do we think he sits on the Mets starting pitching depth chart at this point? Because I think that's an interesting question.
So
the 5 in the rotation right now: Senga, Quintana, Severino, Minaya, and Hauser.
Then McGill.
Nope.
Peter. Peterson's coming back this year, so Peterson.
That's Udo. Something. Yep.
I'd probably put him there. Oh, Lucchese.
Yeah, Lucchese. I'd put him after Lucchese, Budo, probably.
Is he above Vassell?
I don't know. That's a tough
Vassell's
one. Because...
a reliever long term, so yeah, I'd probably put him there.
That's
interesting. I think there'd be a better stuff jump with Vassell, but we can talk about that when we get to him.
Okay, that's all right. Let's save that topic then. We'll put that in the back pocket because who's more likely a reliever between Vassell and Hamill? I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on that now, Ken. So that will wait until we get to number 8. Okay, so let's come back to the starting pitching discussion in a moment then, and we'll do the number 9 prospect, and that's third baseman Jacob Reimer. Jacob Reimer was taken in the 4th round of the 2022 draft, taken out of... oh, for fuck's sake. Ucaipa?
It's in California, right?
Yeah, Ucaipa. I'm going to go with that. I'm sure this is some indigenous people's name I'm butchering, so I apologize. Ucaipa High School in California. He split 2023 between single A St. Lucie and high A Brooklyn. In St. Lucie, he had 75 games, 250 at bats. He hit 280, 412, 392, 6 homers, 61 strikeouts, and 44 walks. When he got to Brooklyn in 79 at-bats over 25 games, he was less impressive. He hit 203, 354, 279, walked 17% of the time, struck out 22% of the – or excuse me, walked 17 times, struck out 22 times. and the BABIP collapsed. He only hit one homer in those 25 games as well. To contextualize those stats, we should always add that Brooklyn is not a particularly friendly place to hit for, especially for left-handed hitters. There's some weirdness with the batter's eye. The wind can be a little fucky. Nevertheless, those are not great stats in Brooklyn. Reimer was something of a, like a, I don't even want to call him a sleeper because he was everyone's sleeper by the end of the offseason, I feel like. Yeah. So like the universal sleeper. Seemed to be a really nice bit of scouting and drafting by the Mets to get him in the fourth round. We talked a lot about how he was better than the prep hitter they took in the second in Nick Morbido, and that's still very much true. A lot of what we thought about Reimer is still the same. He's shown a great approach at the plate. The exit velocities are okay, but not great. And he beats the ball into the ground far too often, right? His launch angle averaged 9, which is way lower than you want it to be. If you watch a lot of his hard contact, it's into the ground. I'll also add that I think he's too passive. I think the bat-to-ball skills are good. I think there's some latent strength in here, but he has a very short, direct swing, and he doesn't swing a lot, and I think he could afford to give some of that back in favor of, you know, swinging a bit more often and swinging harder. Like, his walk and strikeout rates are pretty good. You can sacrifice some of that to tap into your power a bit more, and I think that's something he'll have to do going forward. So where are you guys at on Reimer? What do you think of his first – what do you think after his first full pro season here?
You know I really like him as well as you do. Mm-hmm. I'm a little worried about the defense.
I did not mention the defense. Why don't you tell us about the defense?
It's hasn't been great at third base, and it's makes him a lot worse of a prospect if he's not a third baseman. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. He has to get better at that. Obviously, defense is a thing you could – I think it's a little, I don't think it's a hot take to say it's a little easier to work on defense than it is on like hitting a home run because you could just do drills. But like sometimes people are just bad at it, you know, people not everyone turns into a gold glover. He just got to get passable at third base. Otherwise, you're trying to figure him out. If he's a first baseman, then he really doesn't have the profile for that. If he's an outfielder, then it's a, why would, like, you need a more juice to be there? I don't know. It's tough. He needs to find his defensive home before he figures anything else out, I think, also, on top of the obvious launch angle issues that he has. But I like him because I think there's a base level of on base that is so mm-hmm. hard to find in someone that young mm-hmm. that I'm willing to. Also, like, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's young still. It's not like he's an older prospect. He hasn't been around super long, so.
Mm-hmm. I will, and you guys might be more able to comment on this.
He's only 19, so.
Yeah. No, he's young, and seeing this level of good approach at his age, yeah. Like, I'd rather someone be too passive than too aggressive at this age. I think that's easier to train because, well, we'll see. But I think both of you might be able to comment on this better since I didn't play much baseball growing up. But I think this might be an issue that transcends sports or just is across all sports, rather. When you watch him play defense, the physical attributes are not good. Let's be clear. Like, he does not have a great first step. He does not have great lateral quickness. That's a problem. But watching him, he plays every ball he plays super passively, it feels like. It's almost as if he's afraid of fucking it up. And that accentuates the weaknesses, and I'm sure we've all played with someone who in baseball is afraid of the ball coming to them, or you know, for me in lacrosse is afraid of being passed the ball. Like, I don't want to project that level of I don't want to do that level of armchair psychiatry here, but he's so passive in the way he plays everything that it feels like it makes the tools play down. I don't know if that idea resonates with you guys at all.
Yeah, he's just stiff with everything he does at third. It's just very choppy. It's like when you watch a really good defender, one of the things I notice right away is how smooth everything looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching
one action leads into the next. Yeah.
it's so easy for him, and it's not easy, but he makes it look like it is because of, like Ken said, one action leads into the next, and it's he does not do that at all. It's very choppy. It's very, like, robotic. And to that effect, when you are passive like that, there's less time for you to do everything. Yep. Like, you know how Lindor, and it kind of bothers me sometimes when he does it, but he'll, like, wait for the ball to come to him really slowly, and then he'll, like,
It's because he has like the second fastest transfer in baseball after Javier Baez, basically.
Exactly. But, like, he'll do it at short all the time. And in my head, I'm like, bro, he's going to beat this ball out. And then he doesn't. But he'll wait on this ball, and then he'll just slowly pick it up and just and make it throw. Like, there's not even a guy there running, and it's a perfect throw to first. Even though he doesn't have the strongest arm, it's always very accurate. Like, Reimer can't do any of that. So when he gives that stuff up, in being passive and also being robotic, you can't be both. Mm-hmm. So, like, he either has to figure out getting smoother, which is just reps, and he's also a 19-year-old and probably didn't give a fuck about defense practice in high school because he was too busy hitting home runs, and I don't blame him. Like, so he just has to get better at it. And some guys don't. Like, Mark Vientos, we said this how many times, that he needs to get better at third base, and then he never did, and now he's not a good third baseman, and he's a major league player. He's at the major league level now, and everyone's like, well, what do you do with them? And I don't really want that to be Reimer's future, so mm-hmm. I'd like to see him figure out third base, because it would just make everything so much easier for him, for the Mets.
Jacob Reimer's high school stats were not as crazy as I was hoping. A little disappointed.
That's even a better form of scouting than if he wasn't destroying the ball.
He still hit 440, but he only hit seven homers in 30 games. Like, by high school, by good prospect in high school standards, that's not nuts. Like, Brady House was batting like 600 with a slugging of 1200 or something back when we were tracking him. So, to your point, it feels like watching him is like watching Brett Beatty play defense, but worse. Like, two orders of magnitude worse.
And honestly, like, I think Beatty is a pretty good example of where he could get, because I don't think Brady's a bad Brady.
He's
a
45.
And, like, it just looks bad. Uh-huh. But when he makes the plays, it just kind of looks robotic, but he gets there quick enough and he does the things quick enough where it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And Beatty will never be that smooth third base defender. Obviously, he's not going to be like an elite Gold Glover, but even if you think of like a solid third base defender, he'll never be like that. But I guess like Eduardo Escobar and Beatty at the same time is a good example. Like, Escobar was a bad third base defender, but it looked better. Mm-hmm. But he just got to less things.
Okay, then, Buck.
And Escobar played a lot of third base, you know? And they were like, oh, what a good third baseman he is. And it's like, well, not really. The numbers don't say that. Just the eye test does. But sometimes that lies to you. But, yeah, he just needs to get a little more – it's reps. I don't want to move him off third yet, because I think that's the most important place for him to be. It's mm-hmm. just he has to get smoother.
I wonder if in years past this would have been a dude you could hide at second base, like hide the arm issues, play him with shift aiding, like Max Muncy style. But we can't do that anymore because shifts are illegal. So,
I mean, Nolan Gorman, that was his claim to – the majors at first, right?
They're still playing. They had him at second base.
Yeah, they're still playing him at second.
Even though they have Brandon Donovan, who's better on both sides of the ball,
and he's playing first. Like, Donovan's playing first. It's all weird over there. But like they were trying to hide Gorman there because mm-hmm. there was no place for him to be. But and you could DH him if it gets to that. But I would like more. If you have a full time DH only guy, I want him to have a little more oomph.
Yep.
And he just hasn't had that yet. Like, maybe he grows into that, and then all of a sudden if he starts hitting home runs and is lifting the ball and walking, then I don't really care where he plays, because mm-hmm. then the bat's going to play wherever. But right now, the bat needs to play a third for him to be like him to keep rising. So
it feels very odd to be advocating for someone to add length to a swing, but mm-hmm. it really mm-hmm. feels like he has something to give back there, and it would help the overall offensive profile, I think.
I think it's like kind of what Brandon Nimmo did last year.
Yeah, fair point.
I'm looking up Nimmo's stuff right now, because I know for a fact he walked less last year.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a better overall hitter because of it.
And he swung and missed more. Now, this can also be an early indicator of age-related decline. which is a whole nother topic, but I believe you're, yeah, he struck out more. He still walked as much because he's Brandon fucking Nimmo.
Yeah. But I mean, look at it from, if you're looking at it now, from 2020 to 2021, he had a 14% walk rate, and that dropped to 10% the last 2 years. And the WRC plus stayed the same, but it's more, it's more power. It's 16 home runs and 24 home runs compared to eight
part of years that before. Is he's getting attacked in the zone more.
Yeah.
People know he won't chase.
Exactly. And I think that's important. I think that's an important step for him. And I think that someone like Reimer, who is too passive, like, because I agree, Lucas, I think he is, then all of a sudden you're just striking out looking. And it doesn't really matter that your eye's great, because you get two pitches in the zone that are strikes, and then you have to lengthen the zone and for strike three, and then it's a curveball, and then you, like, you just don't want to get there. And I feel like Nimmo's a good example of how you evolve from that and still keep your eye, because he's still doing it.
Can we have a divergence momentarily to appreciate Brandon Nimmo? WRC plus by year, 2018, 148, 2019, 115, 149, 135, 133, 130. This dude's like one of the best hitters of baseball that no one talks about. It drives me nuts. I love Brandon Nimmo.
Yeah, like, really, no one cares. It's kind of wild.
Okay. So I think the consensus on Reimer here is, you know, swing more, swing harder, be better.
Brandon Nimmo has the second highest WRC plus amongst center fielders since his debut, since 2018.
The other being Trout?
Yep. He has, it's the same as Julio. Higher than Springer, higher than Robert, higher than Reynolds, higher than Buxton.
Put some respect on Brandon Nimmo's name.
Second most WAR, too, higher than Springer.
Last question on Reimer here. Higher or lower on next year's list?
Talk to me after the deadline. Do they trade or add people? Do they trade or away or add people? Because if they trade away people, he's rising. If they add people, he's probably falling. Just out of how it will be set up.
Fair. Okay. So now we can get back to the pitching side of things and close the loop on the interesting point Ken had brought up earlier. Now we're going to cover that as we go to our number 8 prospect. That's Mike Vassell. Mike Vassell was an 8th round pick in 2021 out of the University of Virginia, which, as we've talked about, is a terrible place to go to pitch. This year, he started the season at AA, 10 games, 51 innings, 3.71 ERA, 57 strikeouts to only 8 walks. Aided by a 220 BABIP, worth noting there. Went to AAA after that. I managed to click a link away from the page. Okay, I'm back. 16 games started, 73 innings pitched. He did have a 5.3 ERA. He struck out 81, walked 38. BABIP was normal at 311, though worth noting now that the AAA baseball was effectively played on the moon this year, or at least was in the International League. Which is very odd. After years of suffering through the PCL, we got the same thing, except in the Northeast, which, you know, didn't think that was going to happen. So the Mets have made some adjustments to the pitch mix since he was drafted. Obviously, he's now primarily a four-seam guy. He sits in the low to mid-90s. He'll touch 95 occasionally. Struggles to hold that velocity deeper into starts. You can kind of track things going downhill as soon as he gets to the fourth, fifth, sixth innings. He'll occasionally reach back for a little something extra at that point, but the baseline velocity really goes down. It is effective up in the zone. He's not able to reliably locate it there, so sometimes it gets, you know, hammered when it's not put in the right spot. Has a slider, curveball, and changeup, none of which are particularly standout pitches. If you look at some of the AAA StatCast stuff models that are out there, whether it's the one that Eno puts together or Prospect Lives, both of which, of course, are going to be much worse than anything teams are doing, but it is nice to have something. These models all grade out his arsenal and his secondaries as below average pitches. I think that's largely correct. The slider is probably the best offering here. Cutterish, doesn't do swings and misses at a decent clip, but leaks into the middle of the zone too often, and it's not good enough to induce whiffs when he misses like that. The curveball and changeup are whatever. I don't have any deep comments on them. So, kind of a middling Arsenal overall. And I'm not convinced that we actually have him ranked ordinarily correctly relative to some of the other pitchers in the system now. So, open it up to you guys, and I'll throw it to you, Ken, here first. Why do you think Vassell's a reliever more so than some of the other, more so than Hamill? Because I think we all think Tidwell's a reliever.
Mostly because I think Hamill has a chance to start, and Vassell I've never seen as a starter. Like, mm-hmm. I think, again, he's got a little more velocity. I imagine it probably ticks up a little bit in short bursts. Mm-hmm. Maybe if he adds a little bit of speed to the slider. That goes from being a slightly above average offering to like more of a pitch that he can get outs with or swings and misses with. So it's less about Hamill versus Vassell and more about, I think Hamill has utility in the rotation that I'm not confident Vassell has.
Mm-hmm. Are you at all concerned that he has? I mean, I think I would say he has the worst secondary pitch. Like his, I would never know how to phrase this. His primary secondary pitch is such a stupid way to say it. Like the secondary pitch he uses most frequently is the worst one among Tidwell himself and Hamill. Is that unfair to say?
No. No, I mean, I think that's fair. I'd put him in the conversation with Tidwell of guys. Really, it's just I imagine the stuff takes a jump on mm-hmm. Shorter bursts. I don't mm-hmm. think he's a starter because he has trouble maintaining his stuff as he gets later. And so it becomes how best to utilize a guy who's kind of like a tweener. Whereas, you know, again, Hamill, I think, is the only one of those three who's got a viable shot at being, you know, a starter relatively long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Hamill's big issue is, like, he gets out of games quick because he walks too many people. Like, he's not running out of, he's running out of gas arm-wise because he's
also legitimately has in, like, two pitches as opposed to the other two who would maybe have, like, one and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Vassell, I feel like it's just, he reminds me of those starting prospects who come up and you're just like, all right, yeah, and they just kind of like have like a fine little career and you're like, yeah, that's a great outcome for what for his college career and everything else. It's just he doesn't have the ceiling. Mm-hmm. I think he's more of a floor based
I mean prospect. Are we happy if he's basically Adrian Hauser?
Yes, like I was happy the Mets traded for Hauser, you know. Like that was a fine trade to make because you need guys like that. You need stars, but you also need Adrian Housers. And if Vassell is the 2024 Mets Adrian Hauser, when someone has a shoulder thing for like a week, for like a month or whatever, or in next year he's flip flopping and he's doing the Trevor Williams 2023 role.
Mm-hmm.
That's useful. So I think we might see him do both because this is the game is modernized. In that way, where guys can do both,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if he is a tweener in the real sense, where sometimes he is starting because you have to, and sometimes he's beating some innings in the bullpen because you have to need him to do that. That's fine either way.
So I'm trying to find our. Oh, here it is. I found the sheet. I agree with everything we've said here. Honestly, like I also don't think he's a starter. For the same reasons that you guys have listed. But I'm wondering, I want to confirm that we all did before.
I think he's going to get a chance to start, though, I will say. Mm-hmm. I think he is going to, I wouldn't even be surprised if we see him this year, and I think it would be as a full-time starter. And if mm-hmm. it doesn't go well, then they move him. Because we were talking about the Mets rotation depth chart, and he's probably like fourth,
mm-hmm.
like after the big guys, because
mm-hmm.
it would be Peterson's out till May or maybe the deadline. McGill, Lucchese is two. If we're before Peterson comes back, three would be Budo, and then four would probably be Vassell.
Yep.
Because Scott is more of a, since Scott is a higher level prospect, you might want to see him gestate a little bit more in the minors. Yep. Where Vassell, I think, is a little more ready to go now. Like, if shit really hits the fan, he could be up in like May, because he was probably ready last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just conservative with him. So
here's my question then, because I am on board with everything both you, Ken, and Thomas have said here. Why did we all rank Mike Vassell ahead of Dominic Hamill?
Because he's, I ranked him ahead because honestly, I think that there's more of a chance that he is a major league contributor next year.
So just a proximity argument.
It's, yeah. I usually, with when guys are in the same bucket, because like they're all in the same tier in my head, mm-hmm. I will kind of do it based on proximity. And mm-hmm. like, I just, if we're seeing Hamill in Queens, either something went very right or very wrong. And I think Vassell is going to be part of the equation kind of no matter what.
Okay.
Because he's too close.
That's fair.
And Tidwell's even further away.
Yes.
Than Hamill. And I think I like Hamill a little more than Tidwell. So.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I wonder if there's an argument that Hamill is effectively just as close, because if the International League is going to play this way, why bother sending your pitchers there? Right? Like.
Sure. I also don't know how Stern cares about.
It's a good point. Yeah.
AAA reps. I have no idea. I don't know what the Brewers did in that regard. If they let guys mm-hmm. hang out in AAA before they came up, like, because I know Epler really liked that shit. Like he talked about it all the time, and I just don't know.
I mean, the Dodgers, of course, have gotten into the habit of really over ripening their prospects. Though sometimes it's difficult to tell if that's a developmental decision or just them having too many good players. A little column A, a little column B. I'm not sure what Stearns's philosophy is on that front. So it'll be interesting to see. But I can, the proximity argument makes sense. I mean, I also put Vassell over Hamill, and I had them 10-11 back to back. I think I would flip that in retrospect.
It also, like, I know we're doing numbers, but it doesn't really matter. Like,
No, of course.
Like, these numbers to me are all the same tier. Mm-hmm. And I think there's Vassell, like a clear top prospect, and everyone, then there's another tier, then there's another tier, that, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think this is the same tier that we all talked about these guys in
mm-hmm. today. I think Vassell is the end of this tier. So.
Yes, I agree.
On that note, let's go to the last prospect we'll talk about today and start getting into that real top, near top 100 tier, let's call it. And that's Marco Vargas. Marco Vargas was signed in the 2022 international free agency period by the Marlins. Famously showed up to camp, I believe, as a catcher, as like open tryouts. They did not need a catcher that day, so went out to play second base. And then the dude just hit everything, and they gave him $17,000 and said, sure, fuck it, we'll give this a go. And next thing they knew, they had, you know, one of the best. Some of the best contact data in the DSL in his first season there, to the point where he was like another sort of universal sleeper among all the prospecty types on Twitter. Showed up at the complex this league and really dominated for the Marlins, to the point where every Mets scout was probably calling Billy Epler every week and saying, we're playing the Marlins again this week, and Marco Vargas is killing us again. Which meant when the time came to trade David Robertson and the Marlins asked, old Billy said, how about that Marco Vargas kid? And that's how he wound up as a Met. Really excellent. I recall seeing the initial tweet that they were only getting hitters from the Marlins and being like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, everyone was freaking out.
This return's going to be awful because there's one hitter in the system I actually want, and there's no way they got Marco Vargas for 3 months of David Robertson. Lo and behold, yeah. It was Marco Vargas for 3 months of David Robertson. Now, Vargas was not nearly as good with the Mets after the trade. I believe they promoted him after the trade, and he scuffled a bit in St. Lucie. I do not really care in terms of my valuation there. Still a guy with excellent, you know, bat-to-ball skills. A good approach, lacking impact, frankly. Like the power is a long-term question here, right? How much is he going to impact the ball? He's going to have to get stronger. Also, probably a second baseman long-term. I don't have.
It's giving Jet Williams a little bit.
It's giving. I mean, it's giving Jet minus the high end exit velos, right? Like,
I mean, Jet even doesn't have those really. Like,
Jet has just good exit velocity.
Yeah,
Vargas has not that. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot to like here, right? And not just because the Mets got him for a rental reliever. This dude's a borderline top 100 prospect. I mean, he's only 18 years old and held his own in the domestic complex and also St. Lucie for six games at the end of the season. He walked more than he struck out in the domestic complex, and walked almost as much as he struck out in St. Lucie in the brief sample. So definitely some warts here. This is going to be a long-term project. He's got to add some oomph here. There's never going to be a lot of power, but there's a potentially really nice high contact on base percentage second baseman in this profile that just needs to percolate for a little time. So where do you guys think about Marco Vargas?
I think we're pretty fair on where he is in the system. He was much higher.
Ken and I were the high guys on him, I think.
I mean, still very much a lottery ticket given how far he is from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But presumably a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. So, generally think he fits right around here, where you're, if like 10 to 15 to 20 is like lottery tickets with a remote shot, makes sense to put him, just inside the top 10, where, maybe your lottery tickets with a slightly better shot go.
Mm-hmm. And at least from the people I've talked to, there's been some decent push to include him on top 100 lists already, which is,
I've heard that too.
Very encouraging. Presumably he's going to be at St. Lucie all of next year, right?
Maybe a late call up if he really does well. To get him kind of situated there.
The contrast, I don't know where they're going to send Hauk, obviously, but the contrast between Hauk and Vargas in the middle infield is going to be a really interesting.
Yeah.
You got one dude who's like tiny, makes a lot of contact, good approach, and not a lot of power. And then the other dude's like the classic two sport, hit the ball a mile and maybe actually can't hit that much type of prospect. A very, very weird contrast there if that's how things shake out.
They have so many infielders all of a sudden.
Hey, it's good.
Oh, yeah, it's not a complaint. It's just funny. Like, I remember when they first made all the trades, they were trying to, every day, the complex lineup was like 700 different variations of guys playing different infield positions because they just didn't have the spots for these guys. Like, they'd be DHing and playing third or second or short, or I think even some would get like a game or two in the outfield or whatever. Like, they were just kind of moving dudes around to get them in games. It was kind of funny.
And we didn't even, like, guys like Jesus Baez didn't make the list.
Yeah.
Oh God, who's the other like shortstop third base type who was at this level last year? I think we ranked him. He went to Brooklyn this year. Fuck. Now I have to look it up because it's going to bother me.
Infielder?
Yeah. No. We talked about Barrow.
William Lugo?
Not William Lugo.
Or Junior Tillian.
Junior Tillian, that was it. That's who I was thinking of. And he was
kind of bad in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but he was bad. But like, Junior Tillian was a notable prospect for us last year, and he had a decent year at St. Lucie before getting promoted. Still only 21, and he got like squeezed out of the picture by all the infielders they added.
Yeah, it's a good it's a good thing in general, like overall. But it was almost like it was almost like culture shock to the Mets system a little bit when I would be like looking at these guys and I was like, oh, this whole shit is different.
Who are you people?
Exactly. It was like, oh my God, like half the group is different now. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Vargas is a little hard for us to comment on because this is an area where we have lower visibility into, recent DSL guys in the complex, but a lot to get excited about here, and hopefully we see some of this blossom over, the next season or so. There's a very real chance he's a top 100 prospect next year.
And to put this in context for, like, the larger Mets system and everything, when they first got him, people were like, oh, wow, they just got their, like, second best prospect.
I would have had him second at the time of the trade. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Jet wasn't really fully breaking out. Like, he was, but he got better as the season went on. So some people were saying, could he even be first? And then now he's like nine. And we're like, yeah, this is fine. Because everyone in front of him is so much better. A testament to what they did.
Yeah. I mean, I had that exact argument with Smith Brickner who works at BP at the time of the trade, because he is a big Marco Vargas fan. And we were arguing really about who was 1-2 in the system right after this trade. I recall that now. So, and now he's 7, justifiably so. So that's where we're at.
And everyone's like, yep, 7 is great. Maybe you can make him 5 or 6 if you really want to, but this is the place for him because they really did a number on their system in a good way, a positive number.
What a time to be a Met fan, for once. usually that's what a time to be a Met fan, complimentary.
Instead of what a time to be a Met fan, derogatory.
Derogatory, which is what it usually is. Okay, so that was 7 to 11. Hope you've enjoyed our show this week. As always, you can listen or subscribe to all of our Home Run Applesauce podcasts through Apple Podcasts. We encourage you to leave a review if you enjoy the show. You can also find us on Spotify or whatever other app you use. Not on Google Podcasts anymore, because that's going away. I have to figure out what to use now, because no more Google Podcasts. We are a Patreon-based show. You can visit the Patreon. You can get there. You can get bonus episodes and also help directly support us and all the other podcasts in the network. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. I did get the information this week, and there are no questions, so we're good. You can follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.